Hello and welcome to the Relate Podcast. This is Jessica.
And Grace.
And today is April 22nd.
It is.
2021.
And it's still winter in Nashville.
Well, I think we went from like 70 degrees on Tuesday. It was so beautiful. And then yesterday it did get a little chilly. Now, it actually snowed up north. It snowed in Missouri where Emma is. Yes. People were sending me pictures of their cherry blossoms
with
covered
snow
in
them.
Snow. I mean, absolutely beautiful, yeah. Really exquisite.
We went below freezing last night here. We went down to 30 degrees. Everybody has plastic over all of their flowers and everything because we all put, you know, when we lived up in Ohio, the general rule was you don't plant your flowers in the spring until after Mother's Day, which is, of course, around the middle of May. I guess we're going with the same rule this year in Nashville.
Well, we got some beautiful weather right around the corner. I love Nashville because it's like you might get a little hit of something like that. But by the time March comes around, I mean, you're really looking at, you know, a lot of springtime temps that go well into October.
Yeah.
I will take that. When we lived in Ohio, we opened up our pool on Memorial Day and we closed it at the end of August. I mean, you get like 3 months at the very best.
And you couldn't swim
weather.
On Memorial Day. You could open your pool and you could pretend you were going to swim, but we never did. And what I remember, truly, what I remember most about those years that we had the pool were closing it in September, finally getting around to putting, we'd close it and stop swimming in it, but finally putting the cover on it, doing that in September or October in sleeting snow.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's what I'm freezing.
Yes,
that's
but
what
we
I
did love
that
pool for the 100 days that it was open.
Oh,
so.
My gosh. That was the epicenter of childhood, the years that we lived there. The whole neighborhood enjoyed that pool.
Yeah.
It was great.
Making a whirlpool. You kind of run around the perimeter of the pool.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, one of those above ground pools.
Yeah.
And it was, we had a blast.
Well, it was half above ground and half below ground because we had it sinking into a hill. And so it was just great.
Oh, man.
It was great. It was
simple
some of my
times.
Favorite times.
Well, these cold temps had me getting my boots back on today and my sweater, but you know, it's going to be 80 degrees the beginning of next week. So
I'll take it.
Yeah. I've already put my winter clothes away. Like a big girl. I actually packed up a winter box this year and put it in the attic and just don't have enough room for all my clothes. So
well, mine are all, my winter clothes are all piled up on chairs upstairs and on their way to
so
the closet.
So you're getting there.
But it's an evolution.
It's an evolution. Yes.
But, and the reason they're sitting on the chairs is because really, I'm a clothes hoarder, and I have clothes that I haven't worn in 3 or 4 or 5 years, and I just keep transferring them from winter to summer to winter to summer. Why? They don't, some of them don't fit. They don't, I guess my measure is I'll look at a piece of clothes and say, would I, if I saw this in the store today, would I be tempted to buy it? And if the answer is yes, I keep it. And that's probably the question should be, have I worn this in 2 years? And if I haven't, then let somebody else enjoy it, you know?
Yeah.
But
with clothes, I say out with the old, in with the new. I'm trying to be a little bit more like, you know what? Clothes is something I really enjoy as a person. I've always been very cheap in a lot of regards with my clothes. And I'm like, you know what? I love fashion. I love clothing. I like understated fashion. Like I really, almost really like more minimalism.
I do too.
But every now and then with like a really great statement piece. And I mean, I'm not afraid to, you know, put on a really fun statement piece or something. But really, I like very clean silhouettes most of the time that are just fit really well. I'm like out with the old, in with the new right now is like what I'm thinking. If there's something hanging up in my closet and I don't love it, just get rid of it.
Everything needs edited, and we don't need anywhere the amount of clothing we think we do. That's the problem.
Mm-mm.
We really don't need anywhere near. And you know where I find I make my mistake is when I'm attracted to something in a store because of a color or a pattern. And I really have to really discipline myself to kind of walk away from that. I'm about off-whites, whites, blacks, and grays.
I'm willing to say I would really like this piece on someone else. But I'm kind of getting to this place where I know what my style is.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling comfortable with that.
It takes
my
to your
style
40s and
is
50s
not,
to get
right.
there.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy.
It does.
Like I can look at somebody else and be like, oh my gosh, nailing that look. And when you're in your 20s and 30s, it's like, well, maybe I should try that look.
Yeah.
You get to a certain point where it's like, no, my look is this.
Is this.
And right. I really like my look. So the more I can edit it and hone in on it and develop it, you know, the more
yeah.
fun, refined it will
be. That takes another turn in your 60s where you're willing to let go of, how can I explain this? Of, I don't want to say youthful looks, but kind of childish looks. You're willing to say, that's not for me anymore. And that doesn't mean I need to have old lady stuff, because I don't want any old lady stuff in my closet. But what it does mean is, for me, what it means is that's not a classic look that endures. And so I need to have classic clothing that is always in style, but I need to punch it up with something a little trendy. Something, yeah. And that's the stuff I buy really cheap, is the trendy stuff, you know, because it may be a year, it may be two. I just need junk for that.
Well, if you see like one thing that it could just be like one beautiful pair of earrings or maybe like a little handbag or something that just, it, that's where the color comes in, or some kind of beautiful little pattern. You're like, whoa, this is so cool. And then you picture it with this like chic, like all black outfit, and then this little pop clutch in your hand with the perfect, you know, little earring. I love that look.
You know,
it's so much more artistic and beautiful. Think about a painting, you know, if you're going to have a painting, you want, it's really all about that, that perfect placement of that pop of color. Yeah. It's not about a whole mess of color. Yeah.
You don't need to wear six statement pieces. You just don't, you know, if you just say, this is a beautiful piece, I'm putting it on, and this is another beautiful piece and I'm putting it on, they just get lost, you know? And I think the other thing that I've discovered is colored shoes. Shoes in bright colors.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Just ignore what you're wearing and pick out a pair of crazy shoes. And it works every time. I know I've told you the story, and I may have even years ago? How long have we been doing this? I may have months ago mentioned on the podcast, but mother felt desperately that I needed to go to charm school. She was absolutely right. And one of the things that they taught me in charm school was to wear 13 points, to never go over 13 points.
Okay, so explain the point system. How many points am I wearing right now?
Well, I would say that your sweater, your jeans, and your boots are each a point. So you're well there.
What about my belt?
Your belt's going to be about two.
Okay, so it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Your earrings are only a point. They're very simple today.
Six.
And I'd say all of your rings together are maybe 2 points.
Okay, so I have my 8 points.
Yeah, and I think that's where you're sitting, and that's very understated, very elegant.
Okay. Typically, I would have 2 more earrings in.
And that would be another point, if they were simple.
Okay.
But like, you have a couple of big earring statement pieces and a couple of big necklaces. They can be as many as 3, 4, 5 points. So what I was given a list, which I've long since lost, of what, you know, everything counts as, but if you think about that, you know, if you're wearing some big flowery top,
ew.
Oh, you're 5. It can be a beautiful look. You're 5 points right there. Okay, so you've only got 8 to work with for the rest of your clothing, your shoes, and your jewelry. So, I mean, you know, I
think a lot of this is intuitive.
Well, this was just drummed into me, and I don't know for me if it's intuitive or the fact that, you know, because I'd go home and tell mother, you know, well, this is what I learned. And then she'd eye me up and say, well, do you think you're over 13 points? Because you know anything over 13 points, you were told is gauche. Do you want to be gauche? You know, I mean, mother was,
Well, there's a couple things I don't like too. Like, I love dangly earrings. I'm tall and I can pull it off, but I don't like a necklace with the dangly earrings. So it's, I feel like it competes. I don't mind throwing, I like bracelets too. Like, I love one really artistic bangle or, you know, a couple of small ones. So if I'm going to choose basically between the earrings and the necklace. Yeah. If I do go with the necklace, I'll do a real small earring. And then, you know, I might pump things up with a bracelet, or I might not.
I think
sometimes less is more.
Avoiding sets of things is important, whether you're furnishing
your home
or putting clothes on.
Sets are like
sets of things.
Yeah.
You just have to be careful. And that's why, you know, like, you can go and do a Chico's, or when there used to be Coldwater Creek.
Sets are like the rooms to go of jewelry.
Yes, of clothing. I would agree. I mean, sets of jewelry and also sets of clothing, outfits, pre-purchased, pre-planned outfits can be a mistake. You have to be really careful.
You're never going to look at like a fashionista or somebody who's really elegant in their appearance and be like, nice set.
I don't need to be a fashionista or elegant. In fact, I don't think I have a crack at either one of them. But what I do, I've always dressed in a way that if people are going to notice my clothing, I don't want them to notice my clothing apart from me. I want me wearing those clothes to have some kind of an impact, whether the impact is simplicity, which can be related to elegance, or fun, you know, or playful, or sophisticated. I want to make an impact with my clothing. I don't want people to notice my clothing. I want them, if they're going to notice me at all,
well, and that's not necessary. Well, you're very lucky because when you're tall and slim, people notice you and not the clothes.
That's what you want.
When you're petite, which I think some petite women just wear clothes so adorably.
My friend Linda is an example of that. I mean, she keeps it simple. She keeps it tailored. She sticks to blacks.
They have a
and
different
whites.
Set of rules almost, yeah, but she my mother-in-law off. And sisters-in-law, they're all very petite.
And they pull it off,
they,
man.
They dress to, I love the way they dress. So, yeah. But you know, they have different rules. Now, you and I are a little bit spoiled because we could pretty much put on a lot of different things and people are going to notice you over the clothes. Like, but what I love about right now is that everything is in style.
Everything's okay.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. Think about what jeans are not in style. Yeah. I've got some 90s skater jeans. Yeah. I've got bell bottoms. I've got skinny jeans. I've got floods. Yeah. I've got culottes. I mean, there's nothing that's not in style right now. It's like,
I haven't heard that
so
word.
Basically, you know, you can pick what works for you. Like what works for me, what looks great on me is those early 2000s, like low rise hip hugging jeans. Cause I got really narrow hips and I don't have much of a waist, so like the mom jeans don't work out for me very well. They don't look great on me.
And you figure those things out about your body. You
I don't
out
like myself
works.
Not that I don't like myself in skinny jeans, but I really love like a more of a boot cut or more of a flare. I'm loving the bell bottoms right now. And yeah, so right now though, everything's in style. There have been times, and I don't know if it was just my youth, but or maybe you can speak to this, but in the last few decades where it was like, this is what's in style. This is the jean that you wore. For the last 5 to 7 years, it was like the skinny jean.
Right.
That was all
anything
people
else
wore.
Was, yeah.
And in the early 2000s, it was the bootcut jean.
Right.
You know?
And
then in the 90s, it was that baggy jean, you know, with like a belt, you know? Now it's just whatever you want. So it's like, oh, cool. I can just get up and, you know, put on. So is this some kind of like multicultural postmodern fashion thing that's happening where we can just where everything's in style, just
like,
pick what you want,
like everything
kind of like pick your own gender, but it's pick your own jeans.
I think you and I are doing what we always do. We're overthinking this, and it's really funny because
I'm gonna start putting my jean preference on my Twitter feed, and if people don't honor it, I'm gonna get offended.
I would. In our non, do you have a pronoun for your jeans?
I do.
In our non podcast conversations, we're always chewing ourselves out for being overly serious, overly political, overly philosophical.
Well, we go back and forth between that and being worlds more inappropriate than we even are on this podcast.
But I think that we have really come to new heights of superficiality with this conversation. I'm very proud of us.
I think we might even be able to recruit some new listeners.
I think so.
The philosophy of fashion. I mean, come on.
Okay. So now I'm going to flip it on its head.
Okay. Hey, wait. Now let's do this
conversation.
Like, okay. So if you were going to tell me, let's have some fun here. Like if you were to tell me like one thing that you think I should do, like if you were me and like one thing that you think I should do fashion wise that to have a little bit of a glow up is what they call it now.
A glow up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if I was, and then I'll tell you one thing that like, if I were you, like one thing I would want you to do to give you a little bit of a glow up this spring or summer.
This is
like hypercritical.
I'm feeling
like,
very,
whoa, first of all, nose job. that would glow you up.
This is going to make me feel very vulnerable. One thing you should
If you were me, like you stepped into me and you were like, me, obviously we have different styles and I get that, but if you were looking at me, you're like, oh my gosh, like this would work well for her. Like she should do this. I mean, come on, we look at each other and we think, I mean, I'm not actually think that way in terms of you very often.
Now it comes out. You think, look at me and you think, oh my gosh, what is
if
my
I were her
thinking?
Number one, whoa, 25 points, bring
Jess,
it back a notch.
You're very daring and you're very dramatic in your clothing choices. You're fearless.
What does that mean?
Well, you
think
do?
I dress like a skank?
No, I think you... Can you say that word?
I don't know. We're going to give it a try.
I think you're bold and daring, and I admire your style a lot. you do and wear things that I think to myself, well, that's absolutely perfect, and I never would have done that. Never in my wildest dreams would I put that together and it's perfect. You're willing to wear crazy shoes, and I love that. Crazy shoes are my favorite thing. What would I do if I were you? I sound like I'm copping out, but I wouldn't change much. I mean, you really have a great style. The one thing we recently pulled out of your closet when we were editing that I think you should walk away from altogether is anything that is poncho-esque or wraps. I took one of your ponchos up to the barn to use it as pajamas.
I think those ponchos were like left over from like literally 10 years ago. They had a moment. Like ponchos had a moment.
They didn't really. We just pretended they did. but no, I think, and also whenever
you put a poncho on with your boots and everybody's like, nice poncho. No, it's got a great punch.
They were kidding. And when things that wrap and tie surplice, what's called surplice, you know, when it comes at a diagonal across your body, I never love those on you for some reason. And I do like them as a style, but I never love them on you. Okay. So I think that staying with form fitting. I mean, you know, I think all women do better staying away from bagginess and staying with form fitting clothes. No matter what your form is, you're better off to hug it than to try to cover it with a tent, mm-hmm. no matter what your form is. And I think that, I think that you should just stay with, you know, if you're going to pump anything up, go even a little bit bolder. I mean, you're just, you know, you wear bold clothing and you do it well. That's I would build on that if I were you.
Okay. Well, I feel the same way about you. Like, I mean, everywhere you go, people compliment your style. Every time you walk in the door, I mean, I've purchased clothes that you purchased. You came in with that black dress and like literally I pull out my phone, I'm like, where and how and when did you get this dress? And you know, you tell me where and I just order it.
And it's always the same place.
Just order it, you know. It's always the same place. We won't do any free advertisements, but but the one thing I always think of with you is you always do the same color nail polish. I mean, we joke about this all the time.
My pink corals.
I mean, it's always these, and it looks beautiful. But one thing I really admire and love on women, especially for some reason over the age of 50 or 60, is a more like avant-garde, sophisticated, just really upscale nail polish color, like something like unexpected, like a steel gray or just like a bold white, or you know, I've got black on right now, or just something that's a really offbeat,
unexpected.
I feel like it's so artistic and beautiful, especially on women that are of a certain age, and it just looks really upscale.
I get
a little bored with the corals, but you know, besides that, I think you're just really doing great. and your nails look absolutely beautiful today. Are you doing the dips?
No.
Mm-mm. What are those?
Those are just gels.
Okay. Yeah. Well, have you done the dip?
No.
Hello.
Have you done the dip?
Hello.
Yeah, I need to try the
dip. Oh my gosh. Once you go dip, you'll never go back.
Well, I'll tell you what.
You will hate yourself for every time you chose to get a gel manicure in the past.
Really?
The dip lasts forever. Forever. So you could literally, the gel for me, it starts chipping in like 2 or 3 weeks.
I get 2 or 3 weeks, yeah.
For me, because I've got my hands in water all the time.
Well, my nails grow so fast.
But, I mean, if you get a lighter color, you know, and you get the dip, you can make it last forever.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. They never stop working. Okay. And they don't damage your nail the way that the gel does. Too. Yeah.
That's the reason. I a lot of times, I'm just without a manicure at all because my nails are...
They look really cute right now.
Well, thank you.
I like the length.
You. Gee, I wish you could see them, our podcast buddies. But anyway...
A lot of people want us to start doing a video.
So moving away from the vapid to the important.
Okay, so like, what do you want to talk about now, Mom? How pretty my hair is. Would you describe these as over the knee boots or thigh high boots?
You're just amazing. Well, on anybody else, they'd be thigh high. On you, they're just over the knee. but I wanna apologize from the bottom of my heart last week for identifying Dante Wright as Dante Walker. I know Jesse. I woke up about 5 a.m. Went, oh my gosh, and I texted Jesse, and she tried to repair with a nice apology that she put in front of our podcast, and I really appreciated that. But the fact of the matter is, when you're as opinionated as I am, you don't get to be wrong about facts. You just don't. And I want to sincerely apologize for that. It was just inexcusable. The truth of the matter is when I worked up in Cleveland, Ohio, I had a work associate named Dante Walker. And as soon as I heard the name Dante Wright, the two transposed in my mind and my poor old mind just stuck with it. So I sincerely apologize. And yes, and I also want to clarify, last week I had said that I wasn't sure what his arrest warrant was for. And I had somewhere picked up that maybe it was for possession of a small amount of marijuana. It was not. It was actually for attempted armed robbery. He had stopped a woman on the street with a gun and tried to steal her purse. So this was not, you know, a little thing. That's what that warrant was for. So again, I guess we have to add, you know, I had named six things that Dante Wright did to devalue his own life. And I think we have to put that initial armed robbery, which certainly devalued another person's life, at the top of that list, and then work our way down to the other things that we talked about last week. We won't revisit that. I haven't heard much about it since it happened. I mean, I think that it happening the same week as the Derek Chauvin trial verdict or just the week before certainly fed a fire.
Well, and then you've got is it Kim Potter, the name of the female police officer?
Yes.
Who thought she pulled out her taser. So we've got all of these high profile, racially charged cases going on right now. And
well, are they racially charged or are we making them racially charged?
Well, the media is certainly spinning it.
You know, it's interesting. So Derek Chauvin was found guilty of third degree murder as well as a couple of manslaughter charges. And one thing, this is so interesting because inherent in both bringing the charge of third degree murder and conviction of third degree murder, it is implicit in that charge and in that conviction that he did not have intent to kill George Floyd. It's implicit in that. If he had had intent, they would have charged him with second degree murder and convicted him of second degree murder. So he was committing a felony, which was the assault of George Floyd, when George Floyd died without Derek Chauvin intending for him to die. Some people would call that depraved indifference. Okay? Now, I am neutral about the conviction of Derek Chauvin. I believe that his actions were depraved indifference to the life of George Floyd. All other things being equal. And now what's interesting is there were three other officers that were with him. Two of them, Lane, and I can't think of the name of the other one. Lane and the other one, and one of the other ones.
I don't want to have to do any apologies tomorrow, so just use their first names if you don't know.
I don't know their first names. There were three other officers with Chauvin, okay? Two of them were rookies in the first week on the force.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. These were the first days. Wow. The first week. They were out with Derek Chauvin, who was a 20 plus year vet. Okay. His actual partner that day, I believe, was a general named Tao, an Asian American named Tao. So the way that this played out was, Tao was managing the crowd around that had gathered around this circus that was going on. Tao had his back to Chauvin and Floyd most of the time, trying to keep the crowd back and manage them. Tao was experienced, but not as experienced as Chauvin. The two other officers who were first week rookies were, I guess, assisting Chauvin. One of them said to him two times, "Let's turn him over on his side. I don't think he can breathe. We need to turn him over on his side so he can breathe."
One of the rookies said that?
One of the rookies.
Unbelievable.
Okay? Chauvin ignored him. More evidence, frankly.
Almost maybe like he was showing off for the newbies.
I have no idea and don't want to assign motive. All I know is that if you have a crowd of people, and it wasn't a mob, but it was a gathering crowd saying, "You're killing him. He can't breathe. Get off of him." And you have one of your fellow officers saying, you know, if you say, "Let's turn him on his side so he can breathe," you are implying that in the position he's in, he can't breathe. And Chauvin.
And I mean, for you not to be able to breathe, they really have to be applying a great deal of force.
Well, as the defense made the point in the trial, he was extremely not well compromised. Enough, apparently. He was extremely compromised. So some poor judgment certainly entered into this, but what overrode the poor judgment was a depraved indifference. That's what the jury found. And I trust them. I mean, you have to trust a jury of your peers. And they're not really his peers, because if you're not a police officer, you're never faced with these decisions. It's not one day in your life are you ever faced with these decisions. So how do you have a jury of your peers? But anyway, it's our system. It's not perfect. It's the best there is in the world, but it's not perfect. But my point is that these two rookies, one of the two rookies, recognized what was going on, tried to get Chauvin to modify what he was doing, and he was ignored, you know. So now these three other officers, Tyle Lane and whoever the other one was, I can't remember, are supposed to be tried in August. Well, Tyle had his back to the whole thing, was trying to do another job, which was manage that crowd. Mm-hmm. How are you really going to, what are you going to say, that he was complicit in third-degree murder? The other one, how are you going to show depraved indifference? The other one, clearly, as a first-week rookie dealing with a 20-year cop, 20-year plus cop, sure, is he did step in and say, let's change this, let's stop this. My question is, why didn't he grab his cell phone and call somebody's supervisor? Well,
who?
Because he's that officer.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine, though? Think about the dynamic.
Rookie. No.
He would be ostracized.
Well, not only that. Well, too bad. But not only that, he's a first-week rookie who's being shown the ropes by a veteran cop. So he doesn't have
the experience. He's in a position of subordination.
Well, he doesn't have the experience or the judgment to understand what's going on. The third one, I don't know about. But I know that, you know, even the prosecutor in Minneapolis is saying, how on earth do I get a conviction against these guys under these circumstances? So I think what you're going to see probably is a plea bargain. A statement must be made, because police have to, first and foremost, police one another, right? They have to police one another.
Yeah.
So you're definitely going to see some assignation of responsibility for these three other officers. But I don't know how they get a conviction in this case. I don't even know, frankly, how they find a jury in this case, even if they change venue.
Even the jury that, you know, in this case with, what's his name? The officer?
Derek Chauvin.
With Derek Chauvin, you know, there was no way to bring in a jury that was going to be unbiased at this point. It wasn't going to feel the pressure of this case. There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
We knew that if it didn't go in a certain direction, that there would be some upheaval. But these are the things that I'd like to see as a result of this. Like you, I value our justice system greatly. I value how critical we all are. This is the greatest justice system on the face of the earth, in my opinion, at any point in time we've ever had. And it's still flawed. You know, justice is ultimately
God's,
a sovereign God's. And, and we're just, you know, fallible people trying to do the best that we can. And I think we really are trying. And we have a system where there is accountability in all of this. And so some things I like to see come out of this. Number one is a higher level of awareness within police departments about, you know, what happened with this police officer, that in 20 years he'd become not racist, but at least hardened to the point where, you know, he's just out dealing with business and not, you know, not acutely sensitive to the fact that he's dealing with a physical life on his hands, obviously. So and maybe just a heightened awareness of different practices. And I'm not about getting rid of the police, but I'm all for having you know, better training for how to, you know, take a situation that's really charged
and
de-escalate it. Because I've been involved with police officers a couple of times in my life, not, you know, on not being called.
Tell us about it, Jeff.
But, you know, you've seen situations and you watch, there's not some masterful art of de-escalation that's taking place. A lot of times you've got people showing up that have been given zero training on, you know, how to speak to the heart of a matter. How to, you know, think about how you talk to people in the assisted living environment who are dealing with Alzheimer's, okay? How you are, you know, basically speaking to their reality. Well, if you get called out to someone's home or, you know, somebody who's in a situation like George Floyd, you have to speak to them in terms of their reality that they're experiencing at that point in time. There should be some type of psychological training for how to de-escalate situations. And I think that's great if we're building that awareness. We're becoming more sophisticated in a lot of different ways, and we should continue to grow. And the police should be, we should have the best police force in the entire world. We probably do, but we can get better. There's room for that growth. So that's one thing I'd like to see. The second thing I'd like to see is I'd like to see an awareness on behalf of people like you and me and everyone else that this is not necessarily race issues at this point in time. There was about, I want to say, 10 million arrests last year in the United States of America. And of those arrests, I think there were like 14 unarmed African-Americans that were killed. Okay.
I know.
Now, that's 14 out of 10 million. That percentage is extremely low. If we were to compare that to unarmed white people, armed white people, armed black people, if we were really to look at unarmed officers who got killed, we know this, we do not have an epidemic on our hands of unarmed African American children being shot by police officers, or we don't have that problem.
But let's pretend we do, because everybody, the mainstream media wants to pretend that that is the issue of the day, and it doesn't even.
Well, with that said, I think actually it's a bit of a red herring, but I'm going to give credit to people who are concerned about the lives of the value of the lives of black people in the United States of America, because there is an epidemic. And sometimes when we have a difficult time dealing with the actual facts and the actual epidemic, we tend to focus on kind of some facts and statistics that circulate around the actual truth. And the actual truth is that black lives are not valued in the same way that white lives are.
By whom?
By other black people, number one. By other white people, by Hispanic people, by men, women, by our society at large. I personally don't believe that it's some strong systemic problem or that it's white supremacy, but we, because of our history and because possibly even of historically systemic problems that we've had, I will say that we do have an issue with black lives, quote unquote, not mattering as much as white lives. It is not a simple matter of, because white people hate black people. That would be a very elementary way of looking at it. But we do have these issues. They're complex. If we try to solve these complex problems by throwing these silly little concepts of, oh, it's because white people hate black people. No, that's not true. I love black people.
I love people.
Like, I don't understand.
Oh my God, you know,
and black people love white people. Like, that's where we're at in our society, is that most of us really love everybody and we all love each other, but these problems do exist, and it's really confusing to see it's a higher percentage of a culture of crime within the African-American community. And it's not because black people are inferior. It's not because white people hate black people. It's because of a complex history of many different factors that led to this.
And but so we can't, we're work going on to that because of the red herring.
Those layers. Yeah, we've got to, we're all victims of this red herring.
We need to work on those issues.
We cannot argue with that red herring by presenting other red herrings.
Exactly.
We have to speak to the truth, and it's very difficult when you're dealing with, it's a little bit of a ghosting thing. Oh, look at this over here. When you're dealing with that, it's kind of, you almost want to respond with, look at this over here, which is almost like a red herring in the other direction. Instead, we have to like really discipline ourselves to focus and look at the truth. Yes, we've had systemic racism in this country.
No, because systemic, we need
we
to
have
define
much less.
Well, no, we need to there's define still, systemic racism.
There's still, okay, there still is some systemic racism.
I don't think so. I think there's individual people who are racist. Systemic racism means that we have one set of laws for this color of people and one set of laws for this color of people.
But I'm saying there are remnants of it. I will say this. As a white, middle-class female who is now, I guess I'm middle-aged, but, you know.
Does that make me?
I will not get in trouble okay, I will not get in trouble. Like, I can go drive my car 10, 15, 20 miles over the speed limit. I could carry an ounce of marijuana on me. I could, you know, I can get away with a lot of things that a 20-year-old black man will not get away with. And when I went and got those tickets, this was several years ago, and went in front of the judge, there was a bunch of people of color in there, and they were coming up one by one, and their expectation was, okay, now it's my turn to get in trouble. There was this ingrained thing, and I went up there and shot the breeze.
Charmed your way out of it.
And he said, you're adorable, quote unquote, you're adorable. And then he said, I'm taking care of all of this for you. You can leave. And I turned around, and there were a bunch of people of color looking at me like,
that's just great. Yeah.
They were actually kind of happy for me. I mean, they were, but in their minds, they were probably thinking, it must be nice.
It must be nice.
It must be nice. And in that moment in time, I studied sociology in college. So I took the sociology of law. And it was an eye-opening class taught by a very intelligent law professor, where she showed the way that different groups, males and females have it good in our
so we don't commit system much of crime. Justice. We don't commit much crime.
What I'm saying is that it's less racism and sexism. It's more, at this point in time, strong biases.
Prejudice.
If you are a police officer and you have seen over and over again 21-year-old black men carrying guns, but you don't ever really come across 45-year-old women who are carrying guns and pulling the money.
You gotta approach them differently.
Well, then you start to think about that. But these prejudices do have to be put in check, or else they can turn into racism and sexism.
I agree with you completely.
Because you can start to hate people based on prejudices.
I agree with you completely.
So we have to check our own hearts, and in the system, we have to accept the fact that there are some systemic issues. Systems are made up of individuals, and you cannot say that a system is not racist. Oh, but there are individuals within it that are racist.
I think the
system is infiltrated by individuals, and to the extent, let's say that 5% of the society is racist, well then 5% of the system is racist, you know. But to say that we have this horrific system, we don't. We have the best darn system on the face of the earth. Now, what can we do to make it better?
To make it better.
And beating up white people and saying, you guys are white supremacists, and you need to pay reparations to this guy for something that generations before you did that might have done to generations before him, but we don't even know.
And to say to white people, the color of your skin makes you a bigot is the most racist thing there is.
Or that subconscious message that we talked about, that
the
color of skin makes you better.
Supreme.
You
yeah.
have to, if you want to acknowledge the white supremacy, then you have to say that the color of your skin makes you better in this society than somebody else. I'm not willing to say that.
I think we have to do what you and I are doing right now. I think we have to be unafraid to say these things. And so many people are afraid to even have this conversation. I was listening to Burgess Owens the other day.
I wanted to say one example.
Yes, go ahead.
On the last podcast, is I said the phrase colored people. And I know my grandmother probably said that phrase, like, you know, 50 years ago, like, colored people, you know, maybe it has a place of ignorance.
It's a pejorative. You know? It's considered a pejorative term.
But when it's so close to people of color.
Yeah, you can say people, one, but you can't say
I feel
the
like
other.
In our society, we need to have like a nice big window of comfortability, you know, as far as like referring to each other. Some people think that you need to let people know what your pronoun is. So we have people are erring on different sides. My side is don't get offended very easily and be chill about what people call you. I mean, you could call me, hey, toots, what's up? And I, you know, really wouldn't care, you know?
Say, I don't know.
So, but I guess not everybody's like that. Some people take themselves very seriously. If you want to be called a them and, you know, and a person of color, you know, it's a little stressful. I'm not going to lie.
It's very stressful.
And
it's
I'm not gotten, giving my kids like pronoun
gotten,
options. I'm like, which
ridiculous.
Pronoun would you like to
no,
be called, I'm darling?
Please, thank you.
I mean, Whitman came in the other day and said, I want to put lipstick on too. Be pretty like you. And I said, well, you're not pretty like me. You're handsome. You're a boy. Let's go.
Thank
you. Know?
Thank you.
I mean, I feel like parents today would literally be like, you want to be pretty like mommy and try this out? Well, maybe you haven't decided your gender
yeah,
yet.
Yeah.
let's talk about the fluidity of gender. No, like literally, I will tell my son, you have a penis. That makes you really unique. You and daddy have both have penises. I don't. And I mean, I think, you know, you need to be really straightforward with kids. Kids get it. Kids don't need you to beat around the bush, and they don't need the philosophy of gender fluidity explained to them at ages 3, 4, and 5.
Or 11 or 12. Okay, so I love everything you said. So I'm going to start to tell you a little bit about Burgess Owens. Okay, so Burgess Owens is the representative from the 4th District of Utah. I believe he resides in Salt Lake City. Burgess Owens the other day let Joe Biden have it on a couple of issues. And the big one that he was talking about was Joe Biden's reference to the Georgia voting laws being Jim Crow on steroids. And God love him, Burgess Owens told a story about his great-grandfather, great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, I believe, came to America in the belly of a slave ship, chained to the belly of a slave ship, and he was sold to a plantation owner with the surname of Burgess. And he... His great-grandfather eventually became a freeman. His grandfather had 12 children. And these 12 children, now we're talking about the turn of the last century, early in the last century, these 12 children were all college-educated, okay? One of those children was Burgess Owens' father, who went on to get a Ph.D. I believe he served in World War II and then went on to get a Ph.D., Burgess Owens himself is an educated, articulate man who serves in the U.S. Congress. And what he was recounting was his growing up in the Deep South in Tallahassee, Florida in the 1960s at the height of Jim Crow. And he experienced Jim Crow. He experienced some of what I experienced traveling in the Deep South with my father, which was the white women's bathroom, the black women's bathroom, and the filthy coloreds only bathroom for both men and women. You know, the different drinking fountains, the seating in restaurants for blacks if they were allowed in that restaurant. This is systematic racism. This is Jim Crow. Poll taxes. You know, there's a jar of bubble gum at the voting station, and the black people, in order to cast their vote, have to guess how many pieces of bubble gum are in the jar, and they have to get it to the piece to be able to cast their vote. This is Jim Crow. This is systematic racism. Never heard of that. Now, what Georgia passed in their legislation was that you have to be able to show something that says you are who you say you are. You don't have to have a driver's license. You don't have to have a government-issued ID. You can have one of those. You can have a utility bill that has come to your address with your name on it. You can have a paycheck that has come to you with your name on it. Just something that clarifies your identity so we know that you have A, the right to vote, B, the right to vote once and once only, because if you vote twice, you cancel my vote. So that's what Georgia has done. And our president has decided to compare that to Jim Crow laws on steroids. Now, what Burgess Owens has come to the conclusion is if you think that, then you think that anyone with black skin is too stupid to produce something that proves who they say they are. They can't possibly find the DMV and get an ID. That is the worst kind of bigotry, hatred, and presumption that exists. And this is a black man saying this. So he's lived Jim Crow. He knows what it looks like. And he's telling you that Georgia's voting laws actually help to keep the people that are cheating from disenfranchising the people that are voting legally, including in Atlanta, 51% of the population, which is black. Okay?
Preach it, sister. I get it.
So
amen.
Anyway, and this isn't me saying this. This is Burgess Owens, who is a black man who lived through Jim Crow in the 1960s.
There's a lot of black people saying
and
it.
I know. And,
there's a and lot
Candace
of black
Owens is my favorite one.
But there are a lot more. I've got a lot of friends on social media who are black, who think that this is not just
well, it's
and
harmful to them. Burgess Owens makes the fact that 18% of the black men in the Democratic Party in the last 2 years have deserted the Democratic Party because of this nonsense, and that twice that many, that percentage, 36% of black women that were in the Republican Party have deserted the Republican Party. Now, I think that's really important because they have to go somewhere. And where they're going is conservatism, okay? Because they understand, the black community understands that traditional values of faith and family are what cement our culture together. And while the Democratic Party and the left-wing liberals and the Marxists attack faith and family, and by the way, BLM's entire self-proclaimed platform is to attack traditional family and traditional faith. It has nothing to do with black people.
It's just a bunch of white elites using black faces to do what they've always done.
Exactly.
That is systemic
and
racism.
That is systemic.
But I'll tell
racism.
You this.
It's also terrorism.
Look, you're talking about what's going on in Georgia. Intuitively, in the heart of every man and woman, we know what justice and fairness looks like. But the problem with a big federal government and a country this size is that when things are done on these larger levels, we don't get the impact of the injustice. But so I'm going to bring this down to a smaller scale for you. I want you to imagine you're watching like some kind of, you know, big cinema film, and, you know, it's heart stirring here. But there's nothing more touching than a really good school teacher who knows how to touch the heart of a child. I want you to picture a classroom that is, you know, 70% white or 80% white and a handful of black children in the classroom. And I want you to picture that teacher coming in and inspiring those black children, because maybe they actually need a little bit of a leg up because of some of the historical things that go on. And I want you to think about what you're watching this movie, and it's one of those feel-good movies, and at the end of the movie, you're just like, wow.
Is Denzel Washington in this
Denzel
movie?
Washington is okay. So fine. He's the principal. The teacher has to be white. The teacher has to be white in my vision here.
Okay, but Denzel's
the teacher
principal.
Comes in, and the teacher's not liked at first because people don't understand. But the teacher comes in, and at the end of the movie, you're like, oh my gosh, what an amazing teacher. He really changed the lives of these kids. Does he come in, and does he say, okay, what we're going to do today is...
Is Jack Black the teacher? I want Jack Black to be the teacher and Denzel to be the principal. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so Christian Bale is the teacher.
Oh.
And you don't have to wear shirts at this school either.
Thank you for the visual.
Or pants. So he comes in, and does the first thing that he say is, okay, for Friday's test, I'm going to give all of the black kids in the class 20 extra points right off the bat. Have a great day. Is that inspiring?
No.
Is that just?
No.
Snack time, does he say, okay, every white child in here, I'd like you to give one of your snacks to one of the black children? What kind of fairness does this inspire? None.
Okay.
But what if the teacher comes in, it's Christian Bale, he's buck naked, we're there. He says, what if he comes in and he says, I don't care what the color of your skin is. I don't care who your mommy and your daddy are. I don't care if you're rich. I don't even care if you got an A last year in seventh grade. This is a new class. This is a new year. Every single person in here has a clean slate. And I want to see your best, your best, your best, and your best. And I'm going to be judging each one of you based on the efforts that you put forward, based on your personal character, and how hard you work in my class. And at the end of that class, when the little black girl gets up and she goes up against the spoiled, rich white boy who had every privilege in the world, and she beats him because she worked 10 times harder. That's what inspires us.
I agree.
Why? Because that's what motivates us.
I agree.
Is expecting top performance and delivering against all odds. That is the American way.
Oh, I want to cheer, Jess. I just want to cheer. Thank you. And Burgess Owens, who's one of my new heroes.
That's what he wants.
No,
and then,
what he says.
And that's
okay,
what Georgia wants.
He goes, exactly. He goes
we
down
expect
the line
you all
and he
to do the
names
same thing.
Everything that the Democrats have brought you. The KKK, the poll taxes, the Great Society of 1964, which dismantled the black family. Okay. He talks about everything the Democrats have brought you. And he says, okay, the new Jim Crow, this is a black man talking. He says, the new Jim Crow is the soft, listen to this.
Do you know how more black people supported President Trump than any other president in the history of the United States of America?
Listen to this. You're down a rabbit hole.
Republicans, I'm not talking about Barack Obama.
The soft bigotry of low expectations is what Burgess Owen calls the new Jim Crow. Mm, mm-hmm. Is that you're black. We just can't expect much of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Democrat message. The Republican message is, you're just like me. You're just as smart. You're just as strong. You're just as resourceful. You're going to have to do what I did, which was work your ass off. That's what you're going to have to do.
And I mean, the same can be said between men and women, too. A lot of these women are like, oh, you know, we have to work so much harder to hit that glass ceiling. And, you know, I have not had a long career in corporate America.
Well, I have.
You know, but the women that I respect are like, no, actually, you can hustle, and if you outperform a man, and you know, then you're going to get promoted ahead of him.
No door's ever been closed to me.
And you don't have to sleep your way to the top.
No door's ever been closed to me, Jess.
I mean, I'm sorry. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make people who are involved in, like, the hashtag Me Too movement. Like, I'm sure that there's some good things that came out of that. Whatever.
Not really.
But of all of the times that I've been, like, approached inappropriately, like, in a work environment or outside of the work environment, I mean, men detest, like, men, like, are very sensitive to rejection. You give them, like, a little touch of rejection and boom, they're hustling in the opposite direction onto something else. Have you ever experienced anything besides not interested, okay, running, sprinting away with their tail between their legs?
No, but we're both 6 foot tall blondes. So, you know, you have to put some, I think it's a lot of height thing. I think it's a lot of it is how women present and handle themselves.
I mean, I play the boys game, you know, I'll give it back at you 10 times harder, make you scared to death and make you run away.
Yeah. That's I
then
mean,
threaten you later on some with of everything that's some, important to well, you.
some of it is rearing, and you're very welcome. But no, I mean, I think the other thing that comes with that is, you know, I have questions about what the mainstream media does. Like, okay, Andrew Cuomo, they took one of their own and hung him out to dry a few months ago on these allegations of sexual harassment and sexual inappropriateness. Okay, that was a few months ago. I don't watch any news, so I certainly don't watch mainstream media. But they turned on one of their own, and he's, as far as I know, he's still the mayor of New York. And as far as I know, we've all moved on to something else, and Andrew is still harassing interns.
He obviously has a very gregarious, loose personality.
He didn't step down. He didn't. We just stopped talking about it. Do you know if there's any action against him or anything that's going on with him? I know his brother Chris is still shooting off his ridiculously stupid mouth on mainstream news.
I think there are actually like a large number of harassment cases filed against him.
But there's no political action against him. I mean, no. There was a call for him to resign, but he didn't.
Because this is what I would like to see. It's something called settle down.
Due process?
You got it.
I knew it was.
Due process.
Do you mean an allegation?
Due process for Democrats, Republicans,
black people, men, white people,
women, black people, white people.
So
due
are you saying
process?
So are you saying that an allegation in and of itself is not a guilty sentence?
No,
that's bizarre. No. So let's talk for a minute about.
I mean, a harassment case could be like what now? Like I come up to you and I'm like, you're hot. And I walk away.
Yeah.
Is that harassment in a work environment?
And you should
lose
your job.
If so, I have been harassed a lot.
If you give $10,
and I've also harassed people a lot.
If you give $10 to defend a man who was defending himself against Antifa, you can now lose your job. Somebody gave $10 to the defense fund of the man that I can't think of his name, who was defending himself against an Antifa mob.
It's for the safety of the community.
Yeah, right. Well, I want to touch on that for 1 second, so we have a few minutes left. Yesterday there was another police killing. It was of a 16-year-old black girl in Columbus, Ohio. They shot her 4 times. Let me tell you a little bit about the circumstances. Somebody called the police to this address because there was violence going on. She was trying to kill a girl with a knife. She was trying to kill another black girl with a knife.
So they were actually trying to save somebody's life.
I'm the policeman that shows up, and in a nanosecond, here's what I have to think about, and here's the decision I have to make in today's climate. And this is important, and I'll tell you why.
I get it.
So do I shoot this 16-year-old that is obviously crazy, who, by the way, is in foster care? Talk about root causes. You know what I mean? Who's trying to slash to death another black girl. If I kill this black girl, and they shot her 3 times before she went down, they had to shoot her 4 times. That's how much adrenaline this girl had in her body, and God knows what else. So, and she didn't die in the scene. She died at the hospital. But So anyway, they have to stand there and in a nanosecond decide, if I shoot the black girl, I'm dead meat. If I let the black girl kill the other black girl, I'm dead meat, because if that girl hadn't been black, I would have done something about it. But I didn't care because she was black, so I just let somebody kill her. So
I don't think that this police officer's thinking anything about race.
But here's what's happening. You're a 23-year-old college graduate with a degree in criminal justice. Do you want to become a policeman in this environment? No. The only people that want to be a policeman in this environment, the only young men who are going to become police officers in this environment, are the ones who are doing it for the wrong reasons. Exactly. The ones that we try to avoid. We do psychological profiles so we won't put the power-hungry narcissists on the police force. In 10 years, all you will have on the police force is power-hungry narcissists. You haven't seen anything yet. Quality people won't put themselves in this situation.
Well, I want you to think in terms of when we look at AOC and, you know, what's her name? Maxine
Waters?
Waters.
And, who calls for, oh my gosh.
When we look at this group of mostly women, I guess, that want to get our country to a certain place, one of the most important things they want to do is disarm the country. And in order to disarm the country, you have to disarm the police force. And really, in order to disarm the police force, you really do have to denigrate the importance of not only an armed police force, but
law
just the police force
itself,
in general.
Law and order itself.
So in order to get to a point where ultimately law and order will be cast aside, all while pretending like it's not even all that necessary, this is just part of that process. So kind of realizing how all of it fits together.
Oh man, you're right.
To get to an end point, it all fits together.
You're on target. You
hit
the bullseye.
It's easy to kind of look dumb when you're just like, no, we need this. When you see how it's all working together, it's like when you look at your options, it's either this or this. They're both deeply flawed. Although one group pretends like the other option is idealistic and beautiful and utopian. But the deeply flawed version that we have now is so much worlds better.
You mean the
Let's
version
not
where
throw
we're going to send
what we have here.
Here's the thing: we want to send social workers to the scene. Okay, not police. Like yesterday,
there might be some situations
where
that's appropriate.
Wait a minute. This one yesterday, if we had sent social workers to the scene, now the social workers would be dead too. And if there had been a gun involved, then we definitely need to take away all the guns. Oh, wait a minute. People who own guns legally very seldom.
I think we can meet them in the middle with some common sense things.
We have common sense laws.
I'm open-minded to the concept of social workers going out in some situations.
Maybe with the police?
We can lower our number of prison people we have in jail.
It's all about
mental
illness anyway.
Right.
It's not about crime.
I think it would be great to see that process flushed out in a couple of states that want to adopt it and get some of the problems worked out in that. I'm not all about reactionary opinions. So it's like, okay, yeah, you guys are way off base. I know what your end game is. You want to disarm the populace. You want to disarm the police officers. That's what you want. Because you're living in a dream world.
It is what they want.
You're living in a dream world. I really don't want in my lifetime to have to go through all of the pain and the suffering and the suffering that particularly poor people who are living in urban areas, which is heavily black, but those people will experience. I'll be fine. I do live in white suburbia. What?
But that gives me a great responsibility to address some of these issues. Along with that great privilege that I have.
Nancy Pelosi will just hire private security.
Right. But, oh my gosh, Maxine Waters hired private, she got a police escort to the protest to get rid of police. Honest to God, Maxine Waters rode in a police squad car to get to the protest to get rid of the police.
Look, I know people who are, you know, who travel to other countries who bring security with them when they're in those other countries that are beautiful countries, but they lack law and order.
When we went to Egypt, we did.
White wealthy people and black wealthy people, for that matter, will always be able to protect themselves with private security or whatever. So it is, we talk about systemic racist policy or systemic policy issues that negatively impact the lower income citizens of this country. Destroying our police force would be something that would be very quick. They don't care because it's the end game. They're like, we don't care how many poor people have to die, how many, their end game is to get to this utopia that doesn't actually exist. It's to satisfy some kind of godless ideal within themselves of, we're women and we're going to bring this gentler world where there are no guns involved. It really is a pipe dream. I'm sorry. It just is.
Not only that, it's a pipe dream that's been tried a number of times and failed horrendously each and every time, and brings about more suffering.
It brings about a power vacuum. And when there's a power vacuum,
Evil steps in.
Yeah. Okay, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
But then,
and history teaches us evil, this.
In this situation, would be clothed in, you know, something desirable.
Well, I think it'll look like the Antichrist.
And that person would step in and say, this is what we're going to accomplish, and this is what I'm going to accomplish. You know, it's funny, in my podcast yesterday, a friend of mine said, look, liberals are always looking for solutions to all the problems, whereas conservatives are weighing the trade-offs. And, you know, we've got to, you know, ultimately be aware that every solution has a trade-off. Most of them have 10. And then on all of those trade-offs, we'll need 10 more solutions. And you see how it just grows exponentially. And then the size of government grows.
It grows.
And the more the size of the government grows,
the less individual freedom you have.
And that can happen very quick. So as conservatives,
very quickly,
our favorite word needs to be no.
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 And the Senate is, nope. And the Republicans in the Senate are doing a very good job of holding that line.
No.
Did you see that a bill has been introduced?
It makes us look like jerks sometimes. Okay.
Did you see that a bill has been introduced to make D.C. a state?
Oh, no.
Which, interestingly enough, if you read the Constitution, specifically is forbidden as a never. It's not even to be considered, according to the Constitution. But we don't worry about that anymore because we flush rule of law down the toilet. And one of the goals of the Maxine Waters and the Nancy Pelosi's and the AOCs of the world is to get rid of the Constitution.
To rewrite a better one.
And
probably one that has more of a world focus. Maybe it would be ideal if we could get together with a handful of other countries who have the same goals to save the globe. And
it certainly can't say that all men were created equal, because that implies a creator. We have to get rid of that. And this is, I had a conversation with a very dear, very wise friend of mine yesterday. And again, I boiled everything down to, because this is where I'm located these days, the culture of darkness and the culture of light. And in the culture, and this is where the politics comes in. As you said so eloquently one day, your politics is based on your philosophy, and your philosophy is at its origin underpinned by one of two things. God is, and we are responsible to him, or there is no God, and I'm responsible to no one.
Yeah,
culture of darkness, there is no God, and I'm responsible to no one. Culture of virtue, God is, and I am responsible.
And that's why every person at their core, they really need to answer that question.
What will you do?
Am I accountable to a God or not? And I think there are a lot of people out there that do believe in God, and they've taken that belief for granted for so long that they've allowed themselves to go towards the course of this more, almost like a more atheistic worldview, because they've Santa taken for granted. No, it's even, it's more even like they've taken for granted the presence of God in their lives, and that security and of, you know, being a child of God for so long that they're like, yeah, let's come up with this plan. We'll be fine. You have to ask yourself really at the core, like, do I believe in God? And if so, then, you know, your accountability is so, it's so different. You know, you really have to master that question. And I think there are some people who maybe are still a little bit on the fence with that question. And
that is the most important. I think that question can also be rephrased. I think the most important question of life is, what will you do with Jesus? What will you do with him?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably a good place to leave our faithful listeners today.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Relate podcast. If you stayed with us, maybe you could relate to some of the things that we said, especially that part about Christian Bale. If you have any questions or comments, send them to jessica.hausberger@gmail.com. We hope you guys have a great day.